I'm sorry, everyone. No. I've not done this in this Windows base, so I'm just saying. Okay. Here we go. Hello, everyone. Oops, I messed up the. Hello, everyone. Who is this? Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we're going to 176 Tuesday evening on Mount Olivet, and that's on page 176-01 in all the books except the original, which is 1912-1. See if I can figure out how to get this. Right. No. Pam, would you start us reading tonight?
Sure. Paper 176, Tuesday evening on Mount Olivet. This Tuesday afternoon, as Jesus and the apostles passed out of the temple on their way to Gethsemane camp, Matthew, calling attention to the temple construction, said, "Master, observe what manner of buildings these are. See the massive stones and the beautiful adornment. Can it be that these buildings are to be destroyed?" As they went on toward Olivet, Jesus said, "You see these stones and this massive temple. Verily, verily, I say to you, in the days soon to come, there shall not be left one stone upon another. They shall be thrown down." These remarks depicting the destruction of the sacred temple arose the curiosity of the apostles as they walked along behind the master. They could conceive of no event short of the end of the world which would occasion the destruction of the temple.
And that's exactly what happened, wasn't it? When Rome destroyed Jerusalem. Remember that?
The Roman
And
Empire did some amazing things.
really did. Listen, look forward. Okay, Gary, take the next.
In order to avoid the crowds passing along the Kidron Valley toward Gethsemane, Jesus and his associates were minded to climb up the western slope of Olivet for a short distance and then follow a trail over to their private campsite near Gethsemane, located a short distance above the public camping ground. As they turned to leave the road leading to Bethany, they observed the temple glorified by the rays of the setting sun, and while they tarried on the mount, they saw the lights of the city appear and beheld the beauty of the illuminated temple. And there, under the mellow light of the full moon, Jesus and the 12 sat down. The master talked with them. And presently Nathanael asked this question, "Tell us, Master, how shall we know when these events are about to come to pass?"
Right, so this was the answer to his question, right? The destruction of Jerusalem. In answering Nathanael's question, Jesus said, "Yes, I will tell you about the times when the people shall have filled up the cup of their iniquity, when justice shall swiftly descend upon the city of our fathers. I am about to leave you. I go to the Father. After I leave you, take heed that no man deceive you of many will come as deliverers and lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, be not troubled. And though all these things will happen, the end of Jerusalem is not yet at hand. You shall not be perturbed by famines or earthquakes, neither should you be concerned when you are delivered up to the civil authorities and are persecuted for the sake of the gospel. You will be thrown out of the synagogue and put in prison for my sake, and some of you will be killed. When you are brought up before the governors and rulers, it shall be for a testimony of your faith and to show your steadfastness in the gospel of the kingdom. And when you stand before judges, be not anxious beforehand as to what you should say, for the Spirit will teach you in that very hour what you should answer your adversaries. And these days of travail, even your own kinfolks under the leadership of those who have rejected the Son of Man, will deliver you up to prison and death. For a time, you may be hated by all men for my sake, but even in these persecutions, I will not forsake you. My spirit will not desert you. Be patient. Doubt not that this gospel of the kingdom will triumph over all enemies and eventually be proclaimed to all nations. Exactly what's been happening. Right? All right, Pina, would you take the next
Jesus paused while he looked down upon the city. The master realized that the rejection of the spiritual concept of the Messiah, the determination to cling persistently and blindly to the material mission of the expected deliverer, would presently bring the Jews in direct conflict with the powerful Roman armies, and that such a contest could only result in the final and complete overthrow of the Jewish nation. When his people rejected his spiritual bestowal and refused to receive the light of heaven as it so mercifully shone upon them, they thereby sealed their doom as an independent people with a special spiritual mission on earth. Even the Jewish leaders subsequently recognized that it was this secular idea of the Messiah which directly led to the turbulence which eventually brought about their destruction.
that happened to Tom. Exactly.
So this is basically saying that the Jews are no were no longer the chosen people.
That's exactly what it's saying, Gary. That's exactly what it's saying. All right, Gary, would you take the next one?
Since Jerusalem was to become the cradle of the early gospel movement, Jesus did not want his teachers and preachers to perish in the terrible overthrow of the Jewish people in connection with the destruction of Jerusalem. Therefore, did he give these instructions to his followers? Jesus was much concerned lest some of his disciples become involved in this soon coming revolt and so perish in the downfall of Jerusalem.
So he knew exactly what was going to happen. Good. No doubt.
Basically, he said, I don't want you to be cannon fodder.
That's right. He didn't move all the downfall of it all. Then Andrew inquired, "But Master, if the holy city and the temple are to be destroyed, and if you are not here to direct us, we should. When should we forsake Jerusalem?" And said Jesus, "You may remain in the city after I have gone, even through these times of travail and bitter persecution. But when you finally see Jerusalem being encompassed by the Roman armies after the revolt of the false prophets, then will you know and hear that her desolation is at hand. You must flee to the mountains. Let none who are in the city and around about tarry to save aught. Neither let those who are outside dare to enter therein. There will be great tribulation, for these will be days of Gentile vengeance. And after you have deserted the city, this disobedient people will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into the nations, and so Jerusalem will be trodden down by the Gentiles. In the meantime, I warn you, be not deceived. If any man comes to you saying, Behold, here is a deliverer, or behold, there he is. Believe it not, for many false teachers will arise, and many will be led astray. But you should not be deceived, for I have told you of all of this beforehand.
Can I may ask a
Remember,
question?
yeah, go ahead here.
God is a loving God. Okay, and in this context, this paragraph, it kind of says that God is a vengeful God.
No, it doesn't.
Can
Not at
you
all.
explain that? I mean, why is the Jewish people being basically removed from Israel?
For all their
Well, because
negativity.
what'd you say, Pam?
For all their negativity and
Yeah, because they made that choice, right? They
which one does it?
refused to believe God, his son. Okay, and so they rebelled, and out of their own rebellion, this is the result of the rebellion of themselves. Okay,
So is this a
so
is this an
literally,
act?
they
Go
made a
ahead.
choice, and this is the result of the choices they made.
Right.
Okay, so this is not a result of God's vengeance. It is a result of let me explain it. It's not a result of God's vengeance. It's a result of their rebellion, basically against Rome, which brought about their own destruction.
Well, it's their rebellion against God, in essence, not Rome. Rome is just the happened to be the political
Instrument.
system in place that allowed this rebellion to get to this point. And so basically, this is the Gentiles lashing out at the Jewish world, really.
Then
And the reason this happened is because they did not follow Christ while he was on the planet. If they would have believed in Jesus as the Son of God in his bestowal, then what would have happened in Jerusalem would have been totally different, but it didn't.
okay, so we're
Right?
getting back to God being a vengeful God.
But God is not a vengeful God at all.
Then why
Period.
is he
This is the
claiming
result of
vengeance?
their own actions. In other words, if you walk out in front of a car, what's going to happen? You're going to get run over. God's not going to keep you from getting run over. Or if you choose to be an evil, horrible person and you kill people and molest women and children and that sort of thing, you're not revenge from God, but your circumstance will put you in a place where you will be punished for your own sins. Does that make sense? God will not do it. You do it to yourself. You put yourself in that situations that your circumstance will result in reaping what you sow, basically. Does
Yeah. So what you're
that make
saying
sense?
is they're doing it themselves, and God respects your right to be wrong.
That's exactly right. God ex respects your free will to the nth degree. In other words, if you walk off a building, you're going to crush yourself on the pavement below, right? He will not stop it. The angels will not stop it. That's not their job, right? So whatever you do, you will pay that result for yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
You
that kind
reap
of
what you sow,
solves
you
my
pay for your
dilemma.
own sins. And that's exactly what Jerusalem did. They rejected God's son, and so the result of rejecting God's son is they had no possibility of being rescued by God's celestial forces.
And Gary, you understand the law of cause and effect. So they had so much negativity that they brought it on themselves, that this is what was going to happen.
Yes. And it's true today too, right, Pam? I mean, think of it.
Yeah.
It really is. Let me give you a good example of this. Everybody thinks all these mega preachers and taking money off of folks that don't have it. They think they're getting away with something. They are not. They will pay for that either in this life or the life to come, right? You know, when Jesus says, don't build castles on this planet or this world, Because if you do, you will have no reward in heaven, period. You know, they may put you in the closet instead of an apartment. You know what I'm saying? Right. That
You know,
makes sense.
I'll give you an example. Most of the people I know who were thieves or criminals don't have anything.
That's true. That's
You
true.
know,
They don't have anything lasting. That's for sure.
that's,
Right now, I've lost two, so.
I think I am, or
Okay, go ahead and read.
I think I am. The apostle sat in silence in the moonlight for a considerable time while these astounding predictions of the master sank into their bewildered minds. And it was in conformity with this very warning that practically the entire group of believers and disciples fled from Jerusalem upon the first appearance of the Roman troops, finding safe shelter in Pella to the north.
So they took the prediction to heart, did they not? Because they knew what was coming. This is a, you know, the story about Masada. This is the Roman camp at the base of Masada.
Oh.
The ruins of it. All right, Gary, would you take the next?
Even after this explicit warning, many of Jesus' followers interpret these predictions as referring to the changes which would obviously occur in Jerusalem when the reappearing of the Messiah would result in the establishment of the New Jerusalem and in the enlargement of the city to become the world's capital. In their minds, these Jews were determined to connect the destruction of the temple with the end of the world. They believed that this new Jerusalem would fill all Palestine, that the end of the world would be followed by the immediate appearance of the new heavens and the new earth. And as it was so strange that Peter would say,
Not strange.
huh?
And so it was not strange.
Oh, did I say it was? Okay, yes, I did.
Yeah.
And so it was not strange that Peter would say, Master, we know that all things will pass away when the new heavens and the new earth appear, but how shall we know when you will return to bring all this about?
Okay, so they totally misunderstood what Jesus was talking about when he talked about the new heavens and new earth. And this is his response. When Jesus heard this, he was thoughtful for some time and then said, "You ever err since you always try to attach the new teaching to the old. You are determined to misunderstand all my teaching. You must insist on interpreting the gospel in accordance with your established beliefs. Nevertheless, I will try to enlighten you." Jesus never taught that the end of the world was coming, did he? He taught them that light and life would eventually come, and that's when the new heavens and new earth would appear. Not on this end of the world scenario that they kept trying to stick in there. All right, the master's second coming. Okay, Pam, you're back up.
Two, the Master's second coming. On several occasions, Jesus had made statements which led his hearers to infer that while he intended presently to leave this world, he would most certainly return to consummate the work of the heavenly kingdom. As the conviction grew on his followers that he was going to leave them, and after he had departed from this world, it was only natural for all believers to lay fast hold upon these promises to return. The doctrine of the second coming of Christ thus became early incorporated into the teachings of the Christians, and almost every consequent generation of disciples has devoutly believed this truth and has confidently looked forward to his sometime coming.
All right, so this is just passed down through the generations, is
Yeah.
right. Gary, would you take the next?
And they were to part with him, with their master and teacher. How much more did these new disciples and apostles grasp?
First disciples. these
first
first
disciples,
disciples.
and the apostles grasped at the promise to return, and they lost no time in associating the predicted destruction of Jerusalem with the promised second coming. And they continued thus to interpret this word, his words, notwithstanding that throughout that evening of instruction on Mount Olivet, the master took particular pains to prevent just such a mistake.
Okay, so he did every good thing he could to keep that from happening. Here's a map of Jerusalem during the Middle Ages, right? And further answer to Peter's questions. I have to read a few minutes over here. Why do you still look for the Son of Man to sit upon the throne of David and expect that the material dreams of the Jews will be fulfilled? Have I not told you all these years that my kingdom is not of this world? The things which you now look down upon are coming to an end, and this will be a new beginning out of which the gospel of the kingdom will go to all the world, and the salvation will spread to all peoples. And when the kingdom should have come to its full fruition, be assured that the Father in heaven will not fail to visit you with an enlarged revelation of truth, an enhanced demonstration of righteousness, even as he has already bestowed upon this world him who became the prince of darkness, and then Adam, and who was followed by Melchizedek, and in these days the Son of Man. And so will my Father continue to manifest his mercy and show forth his love even in the dark and evil world. So will I, after my Father has invested me with all power and authority, continue to follow your fortunes and to guide in the affairs of the kingdom by the evidence of my spirit, who shall shortly be poured out on all flesh. Even though I shall be thus present with you in spirit, I also promise that I will sometime return to this world where I have lived in the life of the flesh and achieved the experience of simultaneously revealing God to man and leading man to God. Very soon I must leave you and take up my work the Father has entrusted to my hands. But be of good courage, for I will sometime return, and meantime my spirit of truth of the universe shall comfort and guide you. So you can tell here in this paragraph that he's saying that the spirit of truth is literally his voice while he's gone. Okay? So the spirit of truth is to guide us. So does that mean Jesus is going to be in any big hurry to come back to the planet soon?
Not
I
the
don't
way
think
we
so.
treated him.
No, I don't think so at all. It might be 200 million years as far as we know, but someday he will come back.
I've
All right,
made an
Pam, would you
observation.
take the next?
Excuse me, I've made an observation and I'd like to have your comments.
Yeah.
I believe I'm a seeker of the truth. I think you two are too. And I think with God's given us the spirit of the truth, I think those two fall in line, and that's why we're here.
I missed your point on what.
I feel that the seeking of the truth is what God wants you to do. And
Yes.
I think that is why we are here today, because I think all three of us are seekers of the truth. That's what led us to
Yeah.
here.
Yeah, it did.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. You want to take the next one for me?
Sure.
All right. Is
You
that you,
behold,
Pete?
yeah. You behold me now in weakness and in the flesh, but when I return, it shall be with power and in spirit. The eye of flesh beholds the Son of Man in the flesh, but only the eye of the Spirit will behold the Son of Man glorified by the Father and appearing on earth in his own name.
So he won't be a weak human being any longer, will he? He'll be the full-fledged Son of God, full power. Right. Gary, would you take the next one?
But the times of the reappearing of the Son of Man are known only in the councils of paradise. Not even the angels of heaven know when this will occur. However, you should understand that when this gospel of the kingdom shall have been proclaimed to all the world for the salvation of all people, and when the fullness of an age has come to pass, the Father will send you another dispensational bestowal, or else the Son of Man will return to judge the age. So
That would
basically,
be
what he's saying here, when the kingdom shall have been proclaimed to all the world for the salvation of all people, that means Muslims and Jews both.
that's correct to all peoples,
So
right?
we're not there yet.
And no, we're not. And this is another dispensational bestowal may be sent. In other words, a magisterial son or several, and then a Trinity teacher son. So all these things are yet to come before Jesus will probably come back. All right. Get some things. And now concerning the travail of Jerusalem, about which I have spoken to you, even this generation will not pass away until my words are fulfilled. And it did. The generation did not pass away. It happened within 40 years. When concerning the times of the coming again of the Son of Man, no one in heaven or on earth may presume to speak. So all these people that are predicting the return of Jesus are wrong, right? But you should be wise regarding the ripening of an age. You should be alert to discern the signs of the time. You know when the fig tree shows its tender branches and puts forth its leaves that summer is near. Likewise, when the word has passed through the long winter of material mindedness, that's what it's going through right now, right? And you discern the coming of spiritual springtime, a new dispensation, should you know that the summertime of a new visitation draws near. He didn't say he was coming in back right away, did he? Or that he's coming back then. He says a new visitation draws near. Pam, would you take the next one?
But what is the significance of this teaching having to do with the coming of the sons of God? Do you not perceive that when each of you is called to lay down his life struggle and pass through the portal of death, you stand in the immediate presence of judgment and that you are face to face with the facts of a new dispensation of service in the eternal plan of the infinite Father. What the whole world must face as a literal fact at the end of an age, you as individuals must each most certainly face as a personal experience when you reach the end of your natural life and thereby pass on to be confronted with the conditions and demands inherent in the next revelation of the eternal progression of the Father's kingdom.
We all pass on, though. Then we go on to the mansion worlds and we start a whole different struggle all over. All right, Gary.
Of all the discourses which the Master gave his apostles, none ever became so confused in their minds as this one. Given this Tuesday evening on the Mount of Olives, regarding the twofold subject of the destruction of Jerusalem and his own second coming, there was therefore little agreement between the subsequent written accounts based on the memories of what the Master said on the extraordinary occasion. Consequently, when the records were left blank concerning much that so much that excuse me consequently, when the records were left blank concerning much that was said that Tuesday evening, there grew up many traditions, and very nearly in the 2nd century, a Jewish apostolic about the Messiah's written,
Okay, cryptic.
okay,
Go
apothecary
on.
about the Messiah's written by one Salta, who was attached to the court of the Emperor
Caligula.
Trajan, yeah, thank you, was boldly copied into the Matthew Gospel and subsequently added in part to the Mark and Luke records. It was in these writings of Salta that the parable of the 10 virgins appeared. No part of the gospel record ever suffered such confusing misconstruction as this evening's teaching, but the Apostle John never became thus confused.
That shows why you can't trust any of these writings, right? You really can't. All right. Of all the discourses, courses which the Master gave his apostles, none ever became so confused in their mind as this one, given this Tuesday evening on the Mount of Olives regarding the twofold subject of the destruction of Jerusalem and the second coming. There
Yeah,
was, therefore,
we read that,
little
didn't we?
agreement between the subsequent written accounts based on the memories of what the master said on this extraordinary occasion. Consequently, when the records were left blank concerning much that was said that Tuesday evening, there grew up many traditions in the very early second century. We already read this.
Yes, yeah, so I just read that.
Well, yeah, he must have gone back. Okay, as these 13 men resumed their journey toward the camp, they were speechless and under great emotional tension. Judas had finally confirmed his decision to abandon his associates. It was a late hour when David Zebedee, John Mark, and a number of the leading disciples welcomed Jesus and the 12 to their new camp. But the apostles did not want to sleep. They wanted to know more about the destruction of Jerusalem, the master's departure, and the end of the world. Okay. Yeah, I'll be able to read that.
Three, later discussion at the camp. As they gathered about the campfire, some 20 of them, Thomas asked, "Since you are to return to finish the work of the kingdom, what should be our attitude while you are away on the Father's business?" As Jesus looked them over by the firelight, he answered,
I still didn't get it, did I? All right, Gary, you try
I
this
think
one.
you should have started out the huh, but we'll go on. And even you, Thomas, fail to comprehend what I have been saying. Have I not at this time taught you that our connection with the kingdom is spiritual and individual, wholly a matter of personal experience in the spirit by the faith realization that you are a son of God? What more shall I say? The downfall of nations, the crash of empires, the destruction of the unbelieving Jews, the end of an age, even the end of the world. What has these things to do with one who believes this gospel and who has hid his life in a surety of the eternal kingdom? You who are God-knowing and gospel-believing have already received the assurance of eternal life. Since your lives have been lived in the Spirit and for the Father, nothing shall be of serious concern to you. Kingdom builders, the accredited citizens of the heavenly worlds, are not to be disturbed by temporal upheavals or
Turbed.
thank you, perturbed by terrestrial cataclysm.
Catechisms, yeah.
Yeah. What does it matter to you who believe this gospel of the kingdom if nations overturn, the age ends, or all things visible crash, since you know that your life is the gift of the Son, and that it is eternally secure in the Father? Having lived the temporal life by faith and having yielded the fruits of the Spirit as the righteous of loving service for your fellows, you can confidently look forward to the next step in the eternal career with the same survival faith that has carried you through your first and early adventures in the sonship with God.
Earthly adventures, essentially.
Oh, I said early, didn't I?
Yeah, it's over.
The devil made me do it.
Okay. Each generation of believers should carry on their work in view of the possible return of the Son of Man, exactly as each individual believer carries forward his life work in the view of inevitable and ever-impending natural death to come, right? When you have by faith once established yourself as a son of God, nothing else matters in regards to the surety of survival. Make no mistake, this survival faith is a living faith, and it increasingly manifests the fruits of that divine spirit which first inspired it in the human heart. That you have once accepted sonship in the heavenly kingdom will not save you in the face of annoying and persistent rejection of those truths which have to do with the progressive spiritual fruit bearing of the sons of God in the flesh. You have been with me in the Father's business on earth. Can ever now desert the kingdom if you find that you love not the way of the Father's service for mankind. So you can fall off, go away any time. Boy, that's small, y'all. Let me see if I can.
I think I'd be good.
I think we need this. Did you see what he just did? He just made it 20 times larger, I think.
It's good. As individuals and as generation of believers, hear me while I speak a parable. There was a certain great man who, before starting out on a long journey to another country, called all his trusted servants before him and delivered into their hands all his goods. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, and so on down through the entire group of honored stewards. To each he entrusted his goods according to their several abilities, and then he set out on his journey. When their Lord had departed, his servants set themselves at work to gain profits from the wealth entrusted to them. Immediately, he who had received 5 talents began to trade with them and very soon had made a profit of another 5 talents. In like manner, he who had received 2 talents soon had gained 2 more. And so did all these servants make gains of their master, except he who received but 1 talent. He went away by himself and dug a hole in the earth where he hid his Lord's money. Presently, the Lord of those servants unexpectedly returned and called upon the stewards for a reckoning. And when they had all been called before their master, he who had received the 5 talents came forward with the money which had been entrusted to him and brought 5 additional talents, saying, "Lord, you gave me 5 talents to invest, and I am glad to present 5 other talents as my gain." I didn't quite get that.
So he took the 5 talents, invested them, and then he gave him 5 more talents when he came back.
Talents as my gain. And then
Yes, his
his
game.
Lord said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. Over a few things. I will now set you as steward over many. Enter forthwith into the joy of your Lord." And then he who had received 2 talents came forward, saying, "Lord, you delivered into my hands 2 talents. Behold, I have gained these other 2 talents." And his Lord then said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You also have been faithful over a few things, and I will now set you over many. Enter you into the joy of your Lord." And then there came to the accounting he who had received one talent. This servant came forward, saying, Lord, I knew you and realized that you were a shrewd man in that you expected gains where you had not personally labored. Therefore, was I afraid to risk aught of that which was entrusted to me? I safely hid your talent in the earth. Here it is. You now have what belongs to you. But the Lord answered, his Lord answered, you are an indolent and slothful steward. By your own words, you confess that you knew I would require of you an accounting with the reasonable profit, such as your diligent fellow servants have this day rendered. Knowing this, you ought therefore to have at least put my money into the hands of the bankers, that on my return I might have received my own interest. And then to the chief steward, this Lord said, take away this one talent from this unprofitable servant and give it to him who has the 10 talents.
Now, why would he do that? Because he knew he would gain something from giving it to the one who had 10, right?
But what's that supposed to tell us?
It's supposed to tell us that you're expected to show a profit, well, not money-wise, but you're expected to show a reasonable growth in that which you have. In other words, if you have some kind of talent, like say singing, for instance. If you're a singer and you go out and you sing for the Lord, or you sing for people to make them enjoy it, that sort of thing, that's increasing the talent because you're bringing joy and things to other people. So anything you do, everything you do in life, you're supposed to increase the amount of joy you give to other human beings, basically. Okay, and that's the profit. All right. Gary, would you take the next?
To everyone who has, more shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But for him who has not, even that which he has shall be taken away. You cannot stand still in the affairs of the eternal kingdom. My Father requires all his children to grow in grace and in a knowledge of the truth. You who know these truths must yield the increase of the fruits of the Spirit and manifest a growing devotion to the unselfish service of your fellow servants. And remember that insomuch as you minister to one of the least of your brethren, you have done this service to me.
And that includes everything you do, right? Everything you do in life, you're expected to multiply your service and your talents to other people so that they should grow too, right? And that's in everything. Everything you do, whether you're teaching, serving, whatever, it works in everything in your life. And so should you go about the work of the Father's business. Now and henceforth, even forevermore, carry on until I come. In faithfulness, do that which is entrusted to you, and thereby shall you be ready for the reckoning call of death. And having thus lived, for the glory of the Father and the satisfaction of the Son, you shall enter with joy and exceedingly great pleasure into the eternal service of the everlasting kingdom. This is the steps right into the mansion world, right? And you take this one.
Truth is living. The spirit of truth is ever leading the children of light into the new realms of spiritual reality and divine service. You are not given truth to crystallize into settled, safe, and honored forms. Your revelation of truth must be so enhanced by passing through your personal experience that new beauty and actual spiritual gains will be disclosed to all who behold your spiritual fruits, and in consequence, therefore, are led to glorify the Father who is in heaven. Only those faithful servants who thus grow in the knowledge of the truth, and who thereby develop the capacity for divine appreciation of spiritual realities, can ever hope to enter fully into the joy of their Lord. What a sorry sight for successive generations of the professed followers of Jesus to say regarding their stewardship of divine truth. Here, Master, is the truth you committed to us 100 and 1,000 years ago. We have lost nothing. We have faithfully preserved you all gave us. We have allowed no changes to be made in that which you taught us. Here is the truth you gave us. But such a plea concerning spiritual indolence will not justify the barren steward of truth in the presence of the Master. In accordance with the truth committed to your hands, will the Master of truth require reckoning?
Can you?
So he will require growth, right? Spiritual truth growth. And that's what we do with this book.
And that's how you serve your fellow man.
That's how you serve your fellow man. That's exactly right. Gary, would you take the next?
Okay. In the next world, you will be asked to give an account of the endowments and stewardship of this world, whether inherent talents are few or many. A just and merciful reckoning must be faced if endowments are used only in selfish pursuits and not through, and no thought is bestowed upon the higher duty of obtaining increased yield of the fruits of the Spirit as they are manifest in the ever-expanding service of man and the worship of God. Such selfish stewards must accept the consequences of their deliberate choosing.
So you have to accept the whatever the situation brings out when you're in the mansion world, right? So you have to pay for your time.
So you have to be in remedial classes until you learn the lesson.
That's right. And how much like all selfish mortals was this unfaithful servant with the one talent that he blamed his thought slothfulness directly upon his Lord? How prone is man when he is confronted with the failures of his own making to put the blame on others, sometimes upon those who least deserve it? Well, we all have done that before.
Yeah.
Like, Pam, would you take the next one?
Said Jesus that night as they went to their rest, "Freely have you received, therefore freely should you give of the truth of heaven, and in the giving will this truth multiply and show forth the increasing light of saving grace, even as you minister it." What pops in my mind, the more that we share this revelation, the closer we become to light and life.
I
That's
agree.
right. That's exactly right. All right, for the return of Michael. Gary, would you start this one?
Okay. Number four, the return of Michael. Of all the master's teaching, no one phrase has been so misunderstood as his promise sometime to come back in person to this world. It is not strange that Michael should be interested in sometime returning to the planet whereupon he experienced his seventh and last bestowal as a mortal of the realm. It was only natural to believe that Jesus of Nazareth, now sovereign ruler of a vast universe, would be interested in coming back, not only once, but in several times, to the world whereupon he lived such a unique life and finally won for himself the Father's unlimited bestowal of universe power and authority. Your rancher will eternally be one of the seven nativity spirits of Michael in the winning of universe sovereignty.
Now there'll be spheres for all six other bestowals too, right?
Yeah, it was just
Jesus did.
That kind of
Pardon?
messed me up. That kind of messed me up thinking so, but it's okay.
Sorry. Jesus did on numerous occasions and to many individuals declare his intentions of returning to this world. As his followers awakened to the fact that their master was not going to function as a temporal deliverer, and as they listened to his predictions of the overthrow of Jerusalem and the downfall of the Jewish nation, they most naturally began to associate his promised return with these catastrophic events. But when the Roman armies leveled the walls of Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, and dispersed the Judean Jews, and still the master did not reveal himself in power and glory, his followers began to formulate that the belief which eventually associated the second coming of Christ with the end of the age, even with the end of the world. So that's how all these end of the world scenarios started, right? All right, Pam.
Jesus promised to do two things after he had ascended to the Father, and after all power in heaven and on earth had been placed in his hands. He promised first to send into the world and in his stead another teacher, the Spirit of Truth, and this he did on the day of Pentecost. Second, he most certainly promised his followers that he would sometime personally return to this world, but he did not say how, where, or when he would revisit this planet of his bestowal experience in the flesh. On one occasion, he intimated that, or intimated that, whereas the eye of the flesh had beheld him when he lived here in the flesh, on his return, at least on one of his possible visits, he would be discerned only by the eye of spiritual faith.
So those who do not believe will not see him, will
Wow.
Gary.
Many of us are inclined to believe that Jesus will return to your rancher many times during the ages to come. We do not have his specific promise to make these plural visits. But it seems most people that,
Profitable, probable, most probable.
I don't know why I'm saying people. It seems
Yeah.
probable that he who carries among his universe titles that of planetary prince of Urantia will many times visit the world whose conquest conferred such a unique title upon him.
And we don't know if he's already visited the celestial beings here already before or not, do we? Right? When we positively believe that Michael will again come in person to Urantia, but we have not the slightest idea as to when or to what manner he may choose to come, will his second advent on earth be time to occur in connection with the terminal judgment of the present age, either with or without the associated appearance of a magisterial son? Will he come in connection with the termination of some subsequent Urantian age? Will he come unannounced and as an isolated event? We do not know. Only one thing are we certain of, that is, when he does return, all of the world will likely know about it, for he must come in the supreme ruler of the universe and not as an obscure babe of Bethlehem. But if every eye beholds him, and if only spiritual eyes are to discern his presence, then must his advent be long deferred. Right? All right.
If that's true, then he will be coming back in the age of light and life.
Yeah, probably
Because that,
so.
and the people would see him.
Yeah, Pam.
You would do well, therefore, to disassociate the master's personal return to earth from any and all set events or settled epochs. We are sure of only one thing. He has promised to come back. We have no idea as to when he will fulfill this promise or in what connection. As far as we know, he may appear on earth any day, and he may not come until age after age has passed and been duly adjudicated by his associated sons of the Paradise Court.
So they don't know, and we don't know, do they? We know that nobody knows.
Yeah.
Gary, would you take the next?
The second advent of Michael on earth is an event of tremendous sentimental value to both Midwayers and humans, but otherwise, it is of no immediate moment to Midwayers and of no more physical importance to the human being than the comet.
Practical importance.
Practical importance.
Okay, I'm doing good, huh? And of no more practical importance to human beings than the common event of natural death, which so suddenly precipitates mortal man into the immediate grasp of that succession of universe events which leads directly to the presence of this same Jesus, the sovereign ruler of our universe. The children of light are all designated to see him, and it is of no serious concern whether you go to him or whether he should chance first to come to us. Be you therefore ever ready to welcome him on earth as he stands ready to welcome you in heaven. We confidently look at, for his glorious reappearing, even for repeated comings, but we are wholly ignorant as to how, when, or in what connection he is destined to appear.
Next time is the Wednesday, the last rest.
So we're going to read that on Thursday.
Right. Prayer of acceptance. All right. Who's up there, Pam?
Well, Diane's not here, so it's your turn.
Okay. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By the same faith, I become a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe and Nebadon is Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the paradise father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
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 And thank you all for all coming to see us. Please come see us next time. All right. Let's start the show. And thanks for coming, y'all, helping us
Yeah.
out.
Thank you. It was a very, revelatory reading.
Yeah, it
It
is.
really
It's a
was.
good, it's a good section.
Good section. All right, y'all. We'll see you Thursday. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, buddy.
Goodbye.
What's that? Stop.
Hmm.